My life is extraordinary. In the right light and at the right time, everything is extraordinary. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capitol, California, with Instant Inspiration. My life is extraordinary. That's quite something, isn't it? Now, why is my life extraordinary? My life is extraordinary because my life is filled with peace and harmony and beauty and goodness and life and love. Now, I was just pointing out to the girls here that the car outside the window is flashing its light right into my face. That's good, Ingeborg. Thank you. And I would like to have them pull the curtain so that it didn't flash in my eyes. And I thought I would just sort of pantomime my request to them. But in pantomiming my request, they thought, what are you doing? What are you trying to say? Because the light was not shining in their eyes, it was shining in my eyes. You see, I'm extraordinary. I do things that none of the rest of you do. None of the rest of you were sitting here having the sun shining in your eyes. None of you. You didn't have that privilege. You didn't have that awareness. You didn't respond to the sun shining in your eyes. Now, what I should have done is just let the sun reflect from my eyes into your eyes and just give you a very bright look in your eyes from my eyes. But that would be manipulating you. And I don't need to manipulate anybody or anything for my wonderful expression of my bright eyes. Now, we read a paper today which was quite interesting. It was from the Filipino NT-Filipino program, and it was from Susan, what's her last name? Susan something.
Victoria. No, no, it's not
Susan Forward.
It's not, it says here, Dr.
Dennis,
Susan.
But it's from Dennis.
Oh, it's two Susan. From some
Dennis,
other, Dennis Merritt.
Merritt.
No, that's different. Oh,
Dennis
yeah,
Merritt.
Susan Freeborn, thank you. Susan Freeborn from Dennis John Merritt.
Goldstein.
And what, please, are we having a conversation here?
No.
Okay. Now, what it said was that, and Susan sent it along to her people. What it said was, happiness requires problems. And it was the most interesting observation, because the writer is saying he is like a Cheshire cat, that when people come to him for counseling and they have a problem, he lights up and he says, wonderful. And he says right here, she must have thought I had gone a bit batty when I smiled like a Cheshire cat and congratulated her for the painful relationship problem from which she had come to me for counseling. I told her to celebrate her problems. Perhaps I should explain. I know it may sound odd, but one of the things I like best about my job is that when people tell me about the problems they're going through, often I can use their problem as a launching pad to help them blast out of the problem and into the orbit of the solution. Quite something. Quite something. Most of us, we feel that when we have a problem, we'd like to get it over with as quick as possible. And of course, that's a wise thing to do. But if we look at the problem as something heinous, something undesirable, something that's going to limit us, then we do have a problem. That's the problem. But when problems come along, we look at them as solutions. This is basically what we do in our philosophy here. And we have these circumstances that we live with and we are, and what do we do? Do we get all uptight about them? Yes! Do we think the world's falling apart? Yes. Do we think that everybody's picking on us? Yes. Do we think that we are in the right and we are never wrong? Yes. Well, this is where I have my big fault. I am extraordinary. Isn't that what I said here? My life is extraordinary. And you could pronounce that extraordinary, you know, extraordinary. Because I don't have any problems. Anytime a problem comes along, I just think, yeah, now how do I put the solution to working with this? My life is just one solution after another. No matter what faces me, I instantly stop, take stock of myself, and say, now, what's an easy way to handle this? Not necessarily easy, but what is a beneficial way to handle this? Sometimes the easy way to handle a thing isn't the best way. If your hand is caught in the drain in the bottom of the swimming pool, and you can't get your finger out of the drain, and you can't breathe down there because, you know, you got to have air, well, you cut off your finger, or you get your finger out of the drain somehow, or you drowned, you know. It sounds like not a very desirable series of choices, but you got your finger in there. Now, there is a puzzle that you're all familiar with. It's a woven circle of material like a weed, a leaf or something like that, and it's woven. And you put your finger in there, and your finger just goes in there perfectly. And then you try to take your finger out, and it wraps itself around your fingers so tight that you can't get your finger out. Remember that? Have you ever done that? You've never done that? Oh, those are fun things. Yeah. They sell them in comic stores and things like that. But they're just a little short, maybe 4 or 5 inch gadget. And if you stick both fingers in, then you get both of them stuck. You know, it's like having your finger caught in a bottle. Well, now, how can you get your finger out of that thing? It's so simple, but because it's so simple, it's so difficult. They tell the story of two donkeys who were in heaven, hell, and they wanted to eat. And they put a bunch of hay here and a bunch of hay there, and they tied a rope to the donkeys, and the rope was just long enough to keep both of them away from the hay. And so they were each struggling to get to the hay, and neither one got their hay. And so the donkeys, in donkey fashion, decided, now, I know what we'll do. We'll both eat his hay, and then we'll both eat my hay. And together, we have no problem, because the rope doesn't matter how long it is. But if he tries to eat his hay, and I try to eat my hay, and the rope's not long enough to let either one of us get to our hay, then, you know, we won't eat. And that's hell. Heaven is when they cooperate, and they both eat the hay together. But, you see, is he going to get more hay than I? Is he going to eat faster than I? Is he going to not let me have his hay when I let him have my hay? You see, all of these little things that come up, those are the problems. The solution is just go and eat and go and eat. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful to have, say, a third of the hay rather than none of the hay? So you're with this hungry monster, and he's your same size, but he eats fast. And so he eats more of the hay than you eat, because you're a fastidious eater. It reminds me of my wife. We go into a restaurant, and I'm done eating, and I'm done with the dessert, in fact, and she's still finishing off the main course. And I say, Faith, what's so delicious about that meal, you know? She says, oh, you know. But it's just the manner in which we've been trained ourselves to do things. Now, we here at the monastery, during the School of the Master, say, chew your food 20 times for each mouthful. And, of course, that is an impossible thing to do. It's possible when you have to do it. But it's impossible if you don't have to do it. Because then you want to, it tastes so good. Oh, that's so wonderful. You know, get it down. And it reminds us of our dogs, doesn't it? You drop them a piece of food, and it's down in their tummy before it even hits the floor. They breathe it in. But I'm extraordinary. I'm extraordinary because I look at life as a bunch of wonderful miracles constantly happening to me. The miracle of people in my world, the miracle of pets in my world, the miracle of circumstances in my world. I'm extraordinary, and I know I'm extraordinary, and not one of you is as good as I am. Don't you laugh now. Not one of you can do anything that I can do. Not one of you. Not one of you has the brains that I have. Not one of you. Not one of you have the imagination that I have. Not one of you. Now, what I can say is, the imagination you have is yours. But since we are all one, then my imagination is mine and your imagination is mine. Correct? What's the matter? You feel a little doubt there, huh?
No, that's correct.
No, you should feel some doubt.
No, it's
my imagination is mine and your imagination is mine.
There is only one.
Yes, because there's only one. And ipso facto then, your imagination is yours and my imagination is yours. But you see, that's the point that you often forget when you're talking to some egotist like myself. You say, hey, just a minute now, you know, you make me sound like I'm nothing. Well, that's right. You are nothing. I'm all. I'm me, and I got all of you in me, too. You know, I've got all of your genius, all of your brilliance, all of your wonder, which is nothing compared to mine, of course, and it's in me. But the statement that you want to make is, I do, too. I have all of me in me, and I have all the genius that you are in me, too, right now. But you see, this is what gets you. This is what messes people up. This is why we still feel we want to go out and teach the world. Now, what is that song we have in our songbook? I'd love to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Garbage! I now sing with all the world in perfect harmony. The only way the world can sing is perfect harmony. I don't teach the world to sing in perfect harmony, because then I think the world doesn't sing in perfect harmony. Mm-hmm. And I'm an extraordinary fellow. And I do not think the world sings out of key. If I think the world sings out of key, then I am listening out of key. Then I do not have the perfect pitch that I have. No. Then I do not have the wonderful magic that I have about me. You see, if I find fault in my world in any place, then it has to come from me. Because I cannot see fault in my world unless that fault exists first in me. Now you say, boy, you're sure giving yourself a tough time there, aren't you? Not at all. Not at all. The difficulty comes when we do not take responsibility for who we are. The easy time comes when we take responsibility for who we are. It's not that we have to do something. It's that you have to be aware of something. Now, can I ever teach you anything?
No.
No.
Why can't I teach you something?
Because I know everything.
No.
I am all.
What is it that you do when you go to school?
You learn that you already know.
You learn. What term do we use for that?
Reveal.
I reveal that I already know it. See, that's the term. I reveal that I already know it. Now, it's not something that wasn't there. It's not something that's being put there. It's just that I reveal that I know it. Now, is this house here? Yes. Does our friend who called up a few moments ago, does he know this house is here? Excuse me. No, he doesn't know. He has no idea. He has no idea this house is here. And if he is like many other people, he will think that the university is some great, big, multi-storied building in which many professors and teachers work with students, and it could be, but it's not. We are a correspondence college, dealing with students by correspondence in a very successful way and having a great time at it. Now, when Ellen writes to Mr. Lister, is it?
Mr. Lisson.
Lisson.
Lison.
L-I-S-O-N? Mr. Lison. When you write to him, Ellen, you're going to say to him that as he seeks funding for his education, he has the knowledge that we are registered with the State of California Education, Secondary Education, with our number, what it is, you know. Now, if you don't say that, and he misses that, he might find it difficult to make contact for himself. You understand? So you write a letter and you say, as you seek contact with your financial sources, just mention this information and that may be of benefit to you. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, does Ingeborg have to do that? No.
No.
Does Sylvia have to do that? You do it. Now, why do you have to do it?
Because
because I do so.
Now, whenever whenever Ingeborg and Sylvia get the two names together like Marie, whenever Ingeborg and Sylvia write letters to the students and acknowledge their request and send them syllabuses and gists, it must always be mentioned in there that that is a fact, that that information is in the syllabus on page 4, I believe it is, and as they find it there, they will see, it's further back, about 6, and they will see that it has all the information right there about the state of California and how we are recognized by the state of California. Now, that's quite nice, isn't it? That's quite nice. We're not adjudicated by them, but nobody is adjudicated by the state. The state doesn't adjudicate people. Private organizations do that. But that's wonderful. Now, is there a problem? No, I'm extraordinary. I'm extraordinary. I'm living my life in a very wonderful way. Now, do I have all the money that I enjoy using? Yes. Do I have all of the ability to accomplish things I want to do? Yes. Do I have the respect and honor of people who hear me and who know what I'm teaching? Yes. Is my teaching a teaching that is fun and joy-filled and all that good stuff? Yes. Now, what do you believe about yourself? Go ahead. Be an ego, an egoist. Go ahead. Say you're wonderful. When a little child, you speak to them and you say, "Man, you're brilliant." And the little child says to you, "I know, thank you, I know." Or he doesn't even say thank you. "I know." You want to kick the kid in his teeth because you haven't learned that honesty is said in simplicity and it's not being a show-off. You say, "You're a girl." And you say, "I know." "Well, what makes you think you're so smart that you know you're a girl?" "Because I'm a girl. Because I know it." "And you're a boy." "Well, yes, that's right." "Well, why don't you say, 'Oh, thank you for telling me. Oh, I needed to know that with all my heart and soul. Thank you so much,' you know?" And it's silly. It's silly. We do these things in a very strange way. And Ellen just gave me a note here. And the note says, "Certificate for Barbara Rich." But she doesn't say what kind of certificate. Now, is she getting a certificate of merit for being a beautiful housekeeper? Is she getting a certificate of merit for being a wonderful lady? Is she getting a certificate of merit for being the best dressed lady in on campus, you know? Or is she getting a bachelor's, and a bachelor in what? Theology or metaphysics? Or a master's in theology or metaphysics? Or a doctorate in theology or metaphysics? Or divinity? What's she doing? You see what I mean? Now, why do I ask you all to be very specific about what you're doing so that you will get the results of what you want? Now, if I looked at this here and I would go to my computer and I'd pull up certificates and I'd take off all the information on there and I would just have certificate for Barbara Rich and then our signatures. Now, wouldn't that delight her? Not at all. She'd say, "Certificate for what? In what? As what?" You know? But we have to always be specific. So think of these things. Why am I so very good?
Because you're extraordinary.
Because I'm extraordinary. Yes, that's true. And I think of these things. Can you think of these things? Yes, you can. Now, are you going to think of these things from now on? I think you are. But just remember, you're extraordinary. And I know I'm extraordinary. And
I am extraordinary.
And I will say right here and now to our listening audience here, Ingeborg, please don't put onions in my salad just before I'm going to give a lecture. It does make you feel a little burpy sometimes. And that's not fair. Okay? I mean, I'm serious. You have to be wonderful with people who are extraordinary. Because they'll talk right through a burp, and that's not very nice. So, thank you, Ingeborg. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Love and Button.
You're extraordinary.
And thank you, Herb, for being so extraordinary. Well, my friends, I love you. I love you. I love you.